There's my simple answer.
I don't want to look at these anymore. Do you have any
regrets from being in the military at all, or joining the Army Reserves at all, or anything like that? Anything that happened over there?
I've lost a lot of time just from being deployed or having to adjust, like I said, a lot of time. And I think it's taken a toll on my emotional well-being, because I'm not as optimistic as I used to be. But at the same time, that comes with age. But with those circumstances, it's, I don't know. I regret having faith in people that ended up letting me down. When you live with people and work with people and they want awards, their true colors really show. Like my first sergeant, he seemed like a really great guy, but anytime I called for backup, because like I said, my higher ups were at a different location. Every time I called for backup, he'd say one thing, I'd do it, and then he'd back out of it. Like I had a first sergeant out cussing, for a first sergeant at the place, the location that I was at, out there cussing me out because my soldiers didn't have their shirts on. They just had their t-shirts on. And it was like 100 and some odd degrees outside. And I was told that we could take our tops off. But apparently it was this new FOB policy that you had to have them on all the time. So I had called my first sergeant. He said, take your tops off. You're not under them. And so I've got this other first sergeant from a different company, from the medical company, who you would think would be a little bit more caring, cussing me out in front of my soldiers. And he's had to, I wasn't mean to him. I said, you don't have to cuss at me. I understand what you're saying. You don't have to yell. Just because I'm a girl doesn't mean you. And he's like this big, intimidating guy. I think he was trying to make me cry. And it's stupid. Anyway, yeah, I regret lots of things. I also regret if you're going to be in the military, not to join the reserves. Because if you go active duty, then you're immersed in the culture the whole time. You're doing your job. You're jumping through the hoops. You're reporting. You've got your higher-ups. You've got structure. In the reserves, it's constantly changing. People are coming and going. In a rural place like Montana, our higher up is in Utah, so we have no support. We're the redheaded stepchildren, getting nothing. Plus, when you're trying to balance your civilian life and your military life, it's really hard because you feel like you're half-assing both. Like, you can't wholeheartedly do everything to be good in the military, and the military takes away from your civilian life. So, I recommend. Plus, you get all that active duty time, and your school gets paid for. Instead of being this reservist that gets deployed once or once and only partial benefits, or twice and finally gets full benefits. That's advice, more so than regret, but from experience.
It's good to know.
Yeah. If you know anybody who's ever considering joining the military, just go active duty, do your 4 years, and be done.
Yeah. I had a question. I forgot it. I should have written these down. So you said earlier that when they told you you were going to Iraq, that you were scared that you were going to have to shoot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Did that ever end up coming up again? Or
Yeah, it's something that you just accept. And I didn't have to do it, which is great. And when it came to my first hunting season, I had no problem shooting a deer to put in my freezer.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. In Afghanistan, or before Afghanistan in training, they did send one person home because she could not accept that she might have to shoot somebody. They sent her home. Which, in hindsight, maybe to get out of deployment, it's a good idea. But, yeah. I don't know.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about? Anything I didn't really cover? This is totally open. It's not
okay.
Like propaganda or...
Well, the problem I have is that when people get into certain positions, it's like, okay, the military is set up with a bunch of people that can't get jobs or people who really want to do the right thing. Most of the people can't get jobs. And they're kind of dirtbags, unfortunately. They shouldn't even be in the military, but we got these recruiters that are shoving people in to make their quotas. You give those people a higher rank, and they've got a little power, and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to treat people, especially the ones who are there for the right reasons. When people just get a little bit of power, and they just like, oh, I'll go off. Oh, I can do whatever I want. I think that's a very big problem in the military. Of course, everywhere you go, it's going to be like that anyway, so. But I guess I had an idealistic view of what the military would be. And I'm sorry that I'm disappointed. I believe in what it stands for, and I believe in patriotism, but I don't believe in some things that go on. When I first got to Afghanistan, I had an E6, and I was an E5, a female E6. She picked me to come with her because she'd never been deployed before, and I'd been deployed. I'd been to Iraq. So she wanted me with her because I knew what to do. Well, every situation's different. And what really ended up happening is that I was just doing my job, and I wasn't interested in... I'm not a networking person. At that point, I was not in charge of the post office. I was in charge of the money. So I was in charge of the front of the house, you would say, and all the rodeos that would go out. She got her E7, and I got my E6 while we were there. And then she was pretty, female, and she used it. She used it not just for her networking. But, I mean, she had, like, sergeant majors putting linoleum in her room. Just because you're female and somewhat pretty, that is a power that can be used for or against you. You need to hone that in. Keep the reins on it. Because it's irresponsible to use it to your advantage in the way that she did. And our lieutenant, who was at a different location, didn't like it. And so they had this big feud. And so she got sent to a different location. He got sent to my location because nobody liked the lieutenant. And I got, like, dumped with everything. I had to do the lieutenant's job, and I had to do her job. But she hadn't told me anything. She hadn't given me anything to go off of. And we had a 30,000 soldier surge that summer in Afghanistan in 2010. And it was hell. So, just be responsible, I guess, is being a woman. I'm ashamed of how she used her power and what it created, what it caused. And I wouldn't wish anybody the position that she put me into, because I had to do all of the lieutenant's job and her job and figure out where all this meal was going to go. And I've got people yelling at me and saying, your people need to do extra duties, and we're not even attached to them. We're supporting them, but all they can do is give us grief. So that's, yeah. Told you I was bitter. But you... I hate that I'm somewhat attractive in the military sometimes, because when I was just trying to get people's mail to them, it's like, I got all these people coming up. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I don't even know who you are. Do you want to get coffee sometime? And I'm like, no, I just want to get your soldiers their mail. This is not a dating service. Leave me alone. I don't even know who you are. And, anyway.
Tell me about your husband.
My husband was the main forklift driver for my location. Like I said, there was 10 soldiers under us. And he was like the go-to guy. He knew how to fix things. He was proficient with the forklift, which we got a little training before we left, but nobody knew how heavy that job was going to be. So he was kind of like the jack of all trades, and he'd help me out. I mean, other soldiers would grumble and whatever, and maybe it's because he liked me, but he was the one I could count on. And being the only female in my unit, because the other one left and her and I weren't getting along really anyway because I didn't like her tactics, I guess. I would hang out with him because there was nobody else to hang out with. So he was just awesome at his job. He knew what he was doing. When we came home, he moved to Missoula because he was living in Helena, and moved in and got together, and yeah. He was in the reserves. He got out in April. We have both decided that we're done, especially after the birth of our son, so we both want to stay home and be normal and live our American dream. Because I think if any other deployment did come up, I know my first sergeant would probably pick both him and I to go. And so it was either get out or reenlist. And we're getting out.
Good.
Yeah.
Are you happy about that?
I am. I can't wait for March to come. I'm past that 1 year mark, so they won't send me anywhere now. My husband was working for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, but he just decided this semester that he was going to quit his job and go to school. So he's now in the forestry department, and he's doing woodsman team stuff. So I actually, it's calmed down now, but I was seeing less of him. I thought I'd see more of him, but was seeing less of him. Are you on the woodsman team?
No, I'm not. Okay. It's a shame.
It seems like fun.
What are you going to school for?
I'm a K-8 education. I'd like to teach, I think, like second, third grade. But I guess when I get done with college, I'll settle for whatever teaching position I can get, because that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to stay in Montana or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a tricky business, education business.
I was a health and human performance major, but after I had a little boy, I was like, how would I want, you start evaluating how you want your children to be taught. Hey, I could do that. And my husband's always saying that I'd be a good teacher, so why don't I just change my major and add a couple years on? Oh, boy. That's good, though.
Well, now you have your health and human performance background.
Yeah.
For teaching.
It's true.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
You can definitely say no to this, but do you want to tell me a little bit about your guardian angels, your father and your sister?
Like what? What do you want to know?
I don't know. Anything you want to tell me about them?
Kind of tragic, I guess. I don't know. My sister and I, like I said, we're fraternal twins, but twins strive to be different. She was always, like, really grunge, played the guitar, really into drugs. Before we even knew what meth was, she went on a crank binge one time, and gave herself a mohawk and fell and fractured her head. It was right before she passed away. It was pretty tragic, actually. So my dad went up and down the train tracks with her for several hours looking for mythical people who had stolen her weed. Like I said, it's before like people really knew what meth was. So I just figured it out. I didn't know that crank was meth until I was taking this class. So now I was like, oh, that makes sense. Okay, I get it. Yeah. But she was very talented. She was a kind of like a tortured soul, though. Amazing. I was like the straight and narrow, and she was the bad one. But I think that she made me more tolerant to many people. I mean, diversity was not a thing for me because, I mean, if I could accept Sheena and her accepting everybody else, then, I don't know. She was an amazing, tragic entity in my life. And, but I think also a thing with me is, I'll never have, I don't have close personal relationships with females very easily. So I think that scarred me. I mean, I've gone, it'll be 15 years soon.
Wow.
Almost half my lifetime ago. She died because we were 18. Sorry, I don't think I mentioned that. It was 18 days after our 18th birthday. And it was on 12/6, so that's 18. So I don't know if you believe in, like, numerology or something, but I'm pretty sure that's all related. Amazing. Wonderful person. I mean, I think it's so... it's crazy to me, the people that I haven't seen in a million years, and they recognize me, and they go, I remember Sheena. I remember. And then my dad died 4 months later, lung cancer. He was actually diagnosed with cancer before my sister died in a car accident. He wasn't supposed to get a month, and then Sheena died, and then he died four months later. So that was my senior year. So that's why, like, starting college that next semester was kind of hard for me. Boy, I'm lame, aren't I?
No. God.
But it was a long time ago. My dad was really cool. He was, like, the friendliest guy you'd ever meet. He always smiling and talking to people, and he got along good with people, and he always looked young for his age, too. I'm very happy with his stature because I'm got more on his side, the muscle side, than my mom's side was. My grandma was kind of like a grape. So I'm very excited about that. And his teeth were straight, so... My mom's side, not so straight.
Are you close with your mom?
I am now, later in life. She couldn't get it together, and she let my sister do whatever she wanted, and that's probably one of the reasons why she went down the bad road that she was. I mean, it started it. I'm talking about drugs when she's like 17, 18. I mean, it started when she was like 14. Some even more bad crap. So, but yeah, like later in life, like I had nobody else. So, she lived with me for 5 years, but now we bought the house next door. So now she lives there and she takes care of Clayton during the day when I'm at work or school. She's not like rich or anything. She's not retired. She's getting like a very long family tree or whatever, you know how it branches out and out and out. She's getting like a little bit of the oil going on in North Dakota. North Dakota, you know. So yeah. So that's why she's able to stay at home. She's comfortable, but she's not rich, so, which is probably good for her. You gotta keep it down a little bit. But it's like when you come back home from Iraq or Afghanistan, you got all this money and you blow it. And so if you've only got a fixed amount, then it's good. Anyway, I'm sorry I've been up too late.
That's okay.
Or too long. I got up at 4 to study for my test this morning.
So. Oh my gosh.
Well, and Clayton was up at 1:30 for half an hour wanting to
hang out.
Well, he didn't want to fall back asleep. That's for sure. Anyway.
Do you think that yours and your husband's like role in the military, do you think that'll like affect how you raise your son at all?
Well, he probably won't get away with as much as other kids will. And maybe it's just because of the way my dad raised me, too. He's like, there's no maybe. You either do it or you don't. Yes or no. Say zero instead of O. You know, there's just certain things that you kind of grow up with. So I'm sure that it's going to affect him in the way that we raise him. Yeah, more no-nonsense, probably, but still very caring and loving and nurturing. Yeah.
Is it nice to have your husband, like, here at home with you now, to have somebody who, like, understands, like, what you went through and you went through it, like, together, kind of?
Yeah, he resents me, though, sometimes. He pursued me. But, yeah, I attained a staff sergeant rank. I could have my E7 probably by now if I wanted, which is an E7 sergeant first class. He never got above the rank of E4. So that's always going to be a dissonance between us. And that I was deployed a second time. Like, I got a bunch of coins when I was gone. From various fobs and people, hey, thank you, you've done such a great job or whatever. And my first sergeant when I was in Iraq took me to go meet everybody as we were leaving because I had done such a great job. Anyway, so I've got all these coins. I've got like 18 of them. And so I got one of these little coin holder things and I thought it would be really cool to put it in there and hang it up. And I was like, hey, Brandon, can you hang this up for me? He's like, why do you have to show those off? Because he's only got like 4 or 5. And it's just, there's always going to be that between us that he only got E4. He was only deployed once and not twice. And, you know, for a man, and between a man and a woman, it's supposed to be the other way, right? I mean, that's society's norm. Women aren't supposed to be the badasses, right? So... yeah, that's probably going to always be something that I have to tone down what pride I have, what little pride I have in my military career, at least in front of him.
Is that hard?
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever admitted that to anybody or maybe even realized it. I was so hurt when he did the coin thing. It took him forever, and, like, I had to pick a spot where nobody would even see it. Like, you open the door, and it's behind the door in the living room. He won't let me, like, I have paintings from, because our unit used to go to cool places. I went to South Korea 3 times, I went to Germany, and I went to Italy. And I got some paintings from this guy in Iraq, which were really neat, and like a painting from Korea, and 2 prints from Venice, Italy, and I didn't get anything in Germany because somebody, I'm pretty sure somebody stole my wallet anyway, which was a fun endeavor in itself. But so I've got all these prints, paintings and stuff, and Brandon won't let me put them anywhere. Like, I can put them downstairs. They're fine downstairs. But I can't put them on the wall upstairs. And it's just, like, weird. Those are things that you got without me. while doing military type stuff. You know, it's just like, maybe he's just threatened. His manhood is threatened. Wow. Huh. Hey, there's a good realization. Man, do I just get more depressing as we go along? Or okay, yeah. Not in the slightest. All right, yeah. So, yeah, that's all I think I have on that topic.
Okay.
I do know that if the roles were reversed, I would never want to be the ones to stay home, especially after I have been gone. Men are jerks. They're pigs. So are women, though. I mean, we totally deserve each other, but when you're on deployment, your mind just goes haywire. People are screwing everybody and doing all kinds of crap that they would never do when they're at home because they're bored. One, I mean, you're stuck on a fob. You can't drink. You can't do any. Well, it's probably a good thing you can't drink because you do have weapons that are loaded. But, you know, there's just no release. There's no way of getting out any ambitious, what is it called? Not naughty, playful, whatever, you know, people need to play. They need to have a good time, and they just have no release for that when they're gone. I mean, there's only so much cards you can play, or you can only go to the gym for so long. Ooh, ooh, ooh. And then you've got this buff body, and you have to come back, and you'll lose it all anyway, because you don't go to the gym anyway. But people are strange on deployment, so I wouldn't want to ever be the one being left home and knowing what's going on, or knowing, like, how they're idolizing it or building home up to get through, I guess, too. Anyway.
Do you think there's any way that the military could, like, change that? Is there any sort of way to, like, have that sort of release put into it?
No, not with security. I mean, there's the FOBs, so the forward operating bases, they're small. Some of them are big. The ones in Iraq were huge. In Afghanistan, everything's, like, really spread out. It's a lot smaller locations and stuff. There's only so much that you can do for security purposes. I mean, you can't go to the bar downtown, you know. You can't go outside the wire. I mean, there's the FOB that I was at, and it was pretty big in Afghanistan, was 3.7 miles around. It was a flight line, so airplanes landed in the middle, and we were like gerbils in a cage, because I used to make my soldiers run around the FOB at least twice a week. 3.7 miles. I mean, they try to give us books, and, you know, there's computers, but at that location, we couldn't get internet for some reason. In every other location in 2009, 2010, you could get internet. Not in 2004. Nobody has laptops then. Very weird generational gap I'm kind of in. but yeah, there's really no way without compromising security. It's not. Oh, and then like USO tours. Have you ever heard of those? Like Toby Keith came to Iraq and he played 3 songs. I didn't know who he was at the time. I know who he is now. I didn't know who he was. And he did, like, 3 different places in the same day. 3 songs? Really? You're going to gather this huge crowd for 3 songs? Anyway. So this other girl really loved him. So we had additional duties, of course, because the male is not enough for us. So I told her I'd take her chow hall guard duty. Well, this was after the chow hall bombing, so now we had to have people standing outside, making sure you're clearing your weapons, checking IDs, because they didn't do that before that chow hall bombing, the one that I was talking about. Anyway, so you have to check everybody. You're everybody's supposed to show you your ID. No big deal. Get it out. Clear your weapon. Make sure it's not going to misfire. Fire in the chow hall. Go on your way. Well, Toby Keith came in with his huge entourage of people and just sailed by us like, hello, we're guarding this chow hall. And me and the other guy, you know, we're postal workers. We're like, I don't know. It was so disrespectful that, you know, he couldn't even acknowledge that, oh, there's security set here. I could just say, hey, I've got the MPs behind me, because we saw the MPs after coming in with him. But it's just like this big group of people just like storming through. Hello, have some respect. You're here for us, right? I mean, we're individuals and we're trying to do our job. I don't know. I don't like Toby Keith.
Fair enough.
Oh, and do you know James Gandolfini? Oh, he died recently. He was on the Sopranos. Oh, HBO okay. series. Huh? He was like the main character. And him and Polly, the other character, were supposed to come to Iraq. And he didn't end up coming. And it was on my birthday. I was so upset. So upset. But, sorry, I'm going off on a tangent.
Oh,
So in Iraq, there were big places to draw these people in, these USO tours. In Afghanistan, I never hardly heard of anything except Bagram. Bagram was a really big place, but there was like two main hubs, and that's the only places that anybody would go. And all of those people, most of those people, not all of them, there are like special forces and stuff embedded in and blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's another story. Anyway, they're all just doing like office-y jobs and hardly ever getting fire. Nothing's hardly ever going on, at least to affect that many people on the FOB anyway. But we've got these little FOBs that are all over the place. And I went to a FOB with 40-some men. That's it. I mean, and they're on a hill. They're going up and down this hill. They don't even have something straight to walk on. Do you know how weird that is? To go, all you're doing is going up and down a hill. I mean, that's their entire FOB. And it was just tiny. And they're like, oh, my God, I haven't seen a girl in, like, 6 months. Whoa. That made me uncomfortable. Good thing I have an M16. Mm-hmm. In combatives. Anyway. But then there's, like, the older brother types that are like, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to make sure that nothing happens to you. Because I have nothing else to do. Okay. Thanks.
That's kind of nice.
It is. It's crazy because military people will meet each other, will find each other. They find each other. Even outside of military stuff. For some reason, they always send me to, like, Germany. When I went to Germany and Italy, it's always in the wintertime, and I get laid over, or my flight gets canceled, or whatever. It took me 3 days to get to Germany. But on the way home, it took me 2 days to get home. And this is when someone had stolen my wallet, so I had $1.25 in my pocket. Thank goodness for the USO. But I had to spend the night in the airport, and I had met this guy, and he was military, and we spent the night in the airport, and he spent the night with me and made sure that nothing happened to me. Mm. It's crazy, like, because military people will, like, even if they end up not liking each other, they still, like, hang out, especially in that kind of situation. It's like they know who their buddies are. I know you've got my back. You might not like me, but you'll take care of me. So it is a really cool camaraderie. Yeah. Yay! Something positive.
That's great. Yeah. That's really good.
Yay. Gotta have something good in there.
Yeah. Well, that's all the questions that I have. If there's anything else that you want to talk about, I'm open.
I can't really think of anything. I skied the Alps in Italy, and I went to Florence. I had taken this art history class that I never thought I'd use, and I'm like, Ghiberti's doors. Oh my gosh. It has been fun, but it has been hard as well. It depends on the people you're around and how much they actually care, I guess. But that's anywhere you go. I just thought there'd be a little bit more in the military. But there's not. There's probably less. Just warning you. Okay. That's all I got.
Okay, so I have to introduce myself, and then I have to, like, introduce you, and then you have to introduce yourself, so it's kind of a weird process. But my name is Claire Bergeson. I'm with the University of Montana Journalism School, and I am interviewing Charlotte Schnaise. Is that how you pronounce it?
Schnaise.
Schnaise. Ooh, interesting. Okay. And I my name is Claire Bergeson. I'm with the University of Montana Journalism School. And I am interviewing Charlotte Schnaise, and this is her. If you could say your name, when you served, and your, like, just gonna pause.
Hello, my name is Charlotte R. Schnaise. Today is the 13th of November, 2014, and I'm at the University of Montana.
We'll start off with some easy questions here. So, where and when were you born?
I was born in Tioga, North Dakota, November 17th, 1981.
Great. And do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have no living brothers or sisters.
But you did at one point?
I have had a fraternal twin, Sheena. She died in 1999.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay.
Who or were your parents, and what are their occupations?
My mom is now a stay-at-home grandmother. She lives next door. My father was kind of a jack-of-all-trades. He died in 2000.
What were you doing, like, before you entered the service?
I worked at a car dealership. I was 21 and was looking for something new and adventurous.
So you joined the...
So I joined the Army Reserves.
Okay, cool. Tell me a little bit about BASIC and how that whole process started for you.
BASIC training... Well, my recruiter really liked me. He made me wait like 4 days so that his little sister could graduate high school and come with me so that we were in the same company. It was day in, day out, hardly any sleep. I guess I don't know exactly what to say. We were in the field for 5 days, no showers, lots of marching, obstacle courses. Marksmanship. I'd never shot a gun before I entered the military. Now I'm pretty good at 300 meters. Nice. Iron sights. It was rewarding in a way that it didn't matter what you were doing because that was your purpose right then. It's like there was no wondering. It was kind of comforting. It made me a lot stronger person than I probably would be without it. In fact, I think everybody should go through a form of basic training where they are taken away from all their creature comforts and you really learn what your values are.
Interesting. No,
I don't know.
So you were in basic where, in Montana somewhere?
Basic training is For my occupation was in South Carolina.
Okay.
So it was Fort Jackson, right outside of Columbia, highest STD city in the country, one of them at least, obviously, for military installation. So it was really hot and humid. It's a big difference between Montana and South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a ton of family that's from South Carolina, so I've gone there, like, every summer of my life. You enlisted. So you were just looking for a change of pace and...
Yeah. I heard my father and my sister passed away a couple of years before that, and I was just kind of searching. I had tried college, but I wasn't ready for it. I had passing grades and everything, but I just withdrew. I just didn't know what to do. I had a boyfriend that was not the greatest and not a fulfilling job. So why not try to pay for college later and go join the military? My father was in the military, but I didn't know a lot about it because he never really told me a lot about it. All I know is that he blew up unexploded ordnances in Germany in the 70s.
So you served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the process of, like, hearing about that? So, like, you're in basic and then you're, like, just in the Army Reserves, correct?
Yeah.
So how did they tell you that you were going to Iraq?
So you go through training and then you go back home, is how the reserves work. And then you report to your unit once a week or once a month for a weekend, and then once a year for a couple weeks. So that's pretty much what you do. And then they cut orders and tell you that you're going. When I went to Iraq, I was given about 5 weeks' notice that I was going to go. And then you go to training for a couple months, and you go to Iraq, and then you came home. When I went to Afghanistan, I had about 6 months' notice. So it's different. It just depends on the mission, who's available, you know, who they mobilize, who they choose to send on the deployment, because I'm in a company, but we are sent by platoons. So company's big. The platoons are smaller. We went in groups of like 20-some. Iraq and Afghanistan were both very different because in Iraq we stayed together. In Afghanistan we got separated. Some places only one person went to. So it was totally different. So there's no, I don't know, congruency? So there's no standard experience for anyone or any deployment, regardless of what you do.
So they tell you, like, by mail or by email or phone or something. What was that process like for you, like, getting that information?
When I was given orders to Iraq, I was told that I was getting orders at the unit. But when I was notified of Afghanistan, they called me and said, you're on the list. So it just depends on the timing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be going to drill that next week, they'll probably just wait. But by phone call or by person,
yeah.
I guess.
What was it like for you getting that information?
I guess it was a really big deal because when you're in basic training, it's kind of surreal after you get home because it's over. And then you get told, oh, you're going to go to Iraq. And then you remember in basic training, they're like, oh, yeah, Jessica Lynch was here last summer. Nobody remembers who she is anymore, apparently, but I do. She was the one who got lost and lost her weapon. Anyway. It was a really big deal. The biggest thing that I thought was the hardest for me was knowing that I might have to shoot somebody. But when you put it into perspective that someone might be shooting at you or somebody that you care about, makes the decision a lot easier. But when you come to that realization that you can, that's kind of a hard to swallow, but I don't know how to explain it.
That's okay.
Right.
That's okay.
That was a really big deal. I might have to shoot someone.
What did I want to ask? I'm sorry.
You're fine.
So take me through, like, first getting to Iraq
and you were with the postal company, correct? Mm-hmm. So what that, like, entailed in, like, the beginning for you, or how they train you for that, I guess, too.
When I went to Iraq, the training started in Fort Lewis, outside of Tacoma. We were there for close to 3 months, and they let our families come and visit us. We had so much downtime. It was ridiculous. It was silly. And we had enough time that they could have sent us home, but they didn't. So from Fort Lewis, we went to Kuwait. In Kuwait, we were there for like a week or two, and they went through even more training, and you acclimate yourself because it's a lot hotter, drier over there. They kind of get used to the idea. All you really do is go back and forth to the chow hall and eat and sweat your behind off. And then they sent us to Iraq, where we started getting on the job training. We took over the post office within 2 weeks, and we were doing our job. Is there anything else to that question?
So tell me about your job. What did that mean for you? And
So I'm a postal worker in Iraq. I was an E4, so I was kind of bottom of the totem pole. We facilitated mail going home and the mail coming in, sending it out to other units, because not all the units were in the same location. We had to arrange for the mail to get out. I wasn't part of that in Iraq, since I wasn't one of the higher-ups. I was in Afghanistan. But my job was a postal clerk, so I took money, mostly, and a fixed postage and bundled stuff up for DHL to send it to Bahrain, and then Bahrain to send it to the United States. I went on probably about 50 postal missions out to other locations to facilitate other locations sending home mail. We'd just set up shop for a couple days and work our butts off, because everybody would wait for us every week. And you know how people are. They, like, acquire stuff. I don't even know where they got some of the junk that they got that they had to send home. It's crazy. I facilitated mail. I was also the COPE, and that's the custodian of postal effects. So when the COPE wasn't there, I took care of all the money. Mail is a federal thing, so any mishandling of it is a federal offense. I mean, being in the military to begin with, and you've got that on top of that, you become very honest and efficient. It was waiting for Sundays when I had time to call my family, and there was no internet, and it was just work, work, work. Units were constantly leaving or relocating and not telling us where they went. We had a mountain of mail that we couldn't figure out where it went. Not that it really matters about mail, but honestly, you're bringing morale to the soldiers. I think it's one of the more important jobs that gets overlooked. People criticize us and everything, and you've got entire companies, like battalions, like huge amounts of people, and you've got 20-some people working on your mail. Really? Over 5 large locations? So, kind of, yeah. Boy, I'm going off on a tangent. What else do you want?
No, that's exactly what I want.
I did tell... I can't remember her name, that I might be a little bitter still, but in Iraq's even like farther away than Afghanistan was, so yeah. Anyway.
What are you bitter about, like, that process, or people, like, being disrespectful to you, or?
I am a woman in the military. I have been discriminated against because I'm a girl. I also look younger than I am. I mean, I'm So people would talk down to me, even when I got my E6, people would talk down to me. I was the only female soldier at my location over in Afghanistan, overlooking 10 soldiers and civilians. The civilians wouldn't listen to me, but I was supposed to be in charge. And then my higher-ups were at a different location, so I had no support. But then I had the battalion that oversaw us, breathing down our neck when we weren't even attached to them. And there was a whole bunch of drama in the company that foreshadows that. Mm-hmm. Another female who actually used her femaleness for her own gain. It was stupid. 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 I'm not one of those.
Good. Good to know.
Yeah. Hard to explain. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay. Ask just like a question and then I'll maybe okay. I'm not sure. Or I can start before.
Okay, so this I'm pretty interested in because just as a I know like very little about the military and the Middle East at all. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty curious about like coming back from Iraq and then having that time where you were just in the reserves, felt like in between interim period. Mm-hmm. Looking back on that for you, what that's like now, I guess. And then...
Like being home?
Being home after being gone and then...
In an intense situation?
Yeah.
They were both hard in different ways. Well, when I went to Iraq, or came back from Iraq, It was amazing. It was an amazing feeling, but at the same time, nothing had changed. Everything was the same, but I was different. I was married. We are divorced now, and I'm remarried. And all of the things that he had told me while I was gone that, you know, I had held on to, he never did. I mean, I guess you build up home when you're gone. And you idolize it. I mean, you put it on a pedestal so that you can function because you've got things going on all around you, all this intenseness, plus your job or anybody, superiors who are mean to you or disrespect you because you are a girl, a female that was mean to me because I was a female, semi-attractive, and it must have taken away from her. I don't know what her prejudice was against me, but she hated me. When I was in Iraq. So it doesn't have to just be males. But coming home, it was a big letdown. It was a big letdown. And you don't feel as important. And it's really hard to connect to people. It's really hard because you're so used to the delayedness of everything when you're gone. Like, yeah, bills have to be paid and... You talk to people or you email when you can because we had nobody had laptops in 2004. Nobody had their personal laptops connected to the internet overseas. But when you get home, just like this bang, 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 bang of all this garbage that didn't really matter. I mean, it's your life, but it's not like getting your job done and making sure that you're not getting blown up or... cleaning your weapon every day, you know, it's not the same. So it's just, you see the shallowness of people. You kind of get bitter about it. And I'm a nice person too. I wasn't so nice one night in Iraq because I couldn't be, because people would use that to their advantage. So I was a changed person, and it takes you several years to get back to what you think is normal. And it doesn't seem like it does, but it really does. Even this last time coming back from Afghanistan, I still don't feel normal. I'll never be normal because I have so many more experiences, especially in this college situation. You know, a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds, which I'm glad for them that they're young and they've got lots of things to do, but I get kind of tired of their naive outlook. Sorry, I'm bitter. Error.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. So it's hard.
Yeah.
You're never the same.
That can happen. Like, being bitter about... I feel like you have things to be bitter about. There are a lot. I feel like there are a lot of people in this world that are bitter about things that are silly to be bitter about, but it sounds like you have things that...
Thank you.
Like, I don't know. I think it's justified, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, either. Maybe it's a good thing to be... to, like... see flaws in things that really do have flaws in them.
Mm-hmm.
How, so you have a son?
I do. He's 17 months. His name's Clayton.
Oh, cute.
He is adorable. Boy, that changed his life. I think it changed it in a good way for me because when I came home, I drank way too much, and my husband, too. I think when you're in those intense situations, I'm sure you've heard about veterans coming home and being overly indulgent. And I mean, it may not be the combat, but it's the life that they missed or the life that they, the outlook that they used to have. Like I was saying, the bitterness or whatever. It doesn't have to be just bombs or PTSD bothering you. It could be that you don't connect to people. You don't have that same... not open-mindedness, optimism, not the same optimism that you used to, if that makes sense. So yeah, Clayton, I was working as a server at two jobs. Oh, that's another thing I should probably mention. When you're deployed, you're making money, not, you know, contractor money, not four times the amount soldiers are making, but you're making some money. And you get used to that money, and then you come home and you spend it, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's gone. I've got all these things that I'm supposed to have because I'm living my American dream, but now I can't maintain it. So I don't think that especially reservists are properly like set up emotional, financial-wise to be responsible, especially the younger ones. It's not going to, the money that you get is not going to last forever, obviously, but because you are going to make, like, buy a car or whatever, but that's, I think, probably another issue for especially younger soldiers. So I was working two jobs, and I got pregnant with Clayton, and I decided to go back to school, so that's why I'm here talking to you now. Now I just work once in a while and while I'm in school since I've got the GI Bill. But if I hadn't been deployed twice, I wouldn't have the full amount either. So people who are just deployed once or just in the reserves kind of getting hosed because they don't get full benefits like I do. So, yeah. Anyway, I'll shut up.
No. tell me about... getting the news that you were going back, so going to Afghanistan.
That was another time in my life that, it was less than a year after I had been divorced. I had a mortgage. I got dumped with everything. My ex-husband pretty much dumped me with all the bills, took anything of value, and I was working my two jobs. To try and finish my basement and maybe, like, just sell the house or whatever, try to add some value because it had an unfinished basement. And I was dating a guy, but he pretty much just latched onto me and moved in. So he was kind of living off me. And at the time, it was fine news. I was like, okay, I'm ready for getting out of here. But it probably wasn't the best. It's okay, I guess.
Are you scared?
No, I have guardian angels. When I was in Iraq, like I said, we went to different locations. There was one right across the street. It was called Merez. And this is in 2004. The end of 2004? Or maybe it was 2004, 2005. I can't remember exactly which year. But people hadn't been getting their mail over to us. They couldn't get to us, so they wanted us to come to them, even though they were just across the street. So me and another guy took an armored car over, and we were trying to get everything set up, and my disc crashed. Because we have, like, these floppy disks for this old, ancient equipment. And it's like a 45-minute process to go across the street. And so we went back. I got two more discs. Went back to Merez, you know, an hour and a half later, and I've got colonels and stuff out there cussing at me, just pissed beyond belief, and my both discs crash. And that day, so we say, okay, we will be back tomorrow, and I'm going to have, like, a disc assortment this high, you know, I'll just bring a ton of them. I'm so sorry. There's nothing I can do, ma'am, if I can't use the computer. I cannot do anything for you. People are so mad. And here I'm, this little E4. But that day was, like, if you remember in 2004, nobody remembers, was this really big Chow Hall bombing. And that day, I wasn't there because my discs crashed. I have guardian angels. I have my dad and my sister up there. So I wasn't worried. If something bad's going to happen to me, it's not going to be that. I'm going to die of old age. I have too much to... too much to do in tribute to them, I guess. Because they didn't live full lives. If that makes sense. Okay. So no, I'm not afraid.
Good. How do you think that your time, like, in Afghanistan and Iraq has influenced your life now? How do you think, are there, like, tangible ways that you think that your life has changed, or is it mostly just how you are now, just, like, your I guess your outlook on life, but also, like, more tangible changes, I guess, if that makes sense.
Tangible, like something I can touch?
Yeah, or something that you could, like, write down on a piece of paper or something.
Well, I'm stronger. I had to deal with a lot of crap. My husband and I kind of fell for each other in Afghanistan. We couldn't do anything about it. Until we came home, got married, and have an amazing little boy. So if I wouldn't have been deployed, that wouldn't have happened. I don't know. Mostly it's just been in bitterness, and I'm kind of more of a badass than I would have been. Or at least can pretend that I am, because people are like, oh, she's in the military. Because it's kind of fun. Tell this big guy, oh, yeah, I've got combatives. Don't worry, I'll take you down. Let's see. I don't know. Do you have any other, like, examples, maybe? Because I'm drawing a blank. It's been a long day.
I don't really know. I suppose, like, no, I think those are perfect, actually, just, okay. Like, being stronger and et cetera. So, if it's, like, too traumatic to talk about, that's okay, but did any more incidents like that bombing happen around you or anything like that happen?
Well, in Afghanistan, we had pretty chintzy housing. There was one part where the fence was just like a, I think, It was just like not even chain link or whatever. But we always had RPGs coming in. One time we had bullets flying in our, like, by our sleeping quarters. They were built of, what is it? Plywood? Oh, yeah. Fun. So we had these, like, barriers, concrete barriers that barely fit anybody in them. Or you could go to the bathrooms where it was all humid. I was told of some really big thing going on from the IT guys. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go to the IT building because they lived in the same kind of wood huts. And I made all of the civilians and soldiers go to the post office and spend the night. And they were so pissed at me because nothing happened. Well, when an IT guy, the computer guys that are like monitoring what's going on, tell you, you should take cover. Well, of course I'm going to. So nothing happened. But then I'm still like scarring people because I made them go to the post office with all their battle gear and they're tired. Oh, God. Anyway, what do you expect? It's the war zone. I was just trying to, you know, keep you safe.
Yeah.
And later on, the MPs told me that that was actually a good thing, but that I did a good thing. Because there was supposed to be something going on. So, and military, MP is military police. They're Air Force guys, but they were still very nice. There's like a Army doesn't like Air Force because they're the chair force because they're lazier, smarter, blah, blah. Marines don't like Army because the same reason. Navy's just kind of out there. Anyway, there's a rivalry between. So when it's a multi, what is that called? Boy.
Branch.
Yep. Something like that. Multi-branch FOB. Place. FOB is a forward operating base where you are. Then you're going to get a mixture of people. Anyway. Yeah.